Suns Week in All. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings, Voice of America listeners. I'm Muck Bill Yabrow, and I'm here filling in for Sonny Young. Let's jump right into the September 28th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Running onto the football pitch, my colleague Mike Hove and I dove right into the English Premiership action that has happened over the past few weeks, and we looked ahead at the games coming up this weekend. We also spoke about potential teams that have the chance of dethroning the treble champs, Manchester City. Let's have a listen. On today's segment of the Sunny Side of Sports, I have with me my guy, Mike Hove. Mikey, what's going on, brother?
What's good? What's good?
Yes, so we are going to jump into the EPL conversation. You know, we have a United fan here, and Mike, I'm an Arsenal guy, so we definitely will be having conversations about our respective teams. But all in all, man, how has the EPL looked in your mind this season so far?
I mean, it's been shaping up. The way it is, obviously, it, as you highlighted, as a United fan, obviously, it's not been the season expected from a big team like Manchester United. But you know what? It's a long season, so things may or may not change. However, there's some teams that are living up to, and of course, there's been a couple of shockers. So, for example, Man City. Man City's living up to their name, 6-6, undefeated. Liverpool living up. They actually a big change from last season. This year they're actually punching up their four title contenders. Now the biggest surprise, of course, Brighton. They have really been pulling their weight, and so far they're third in post. And you know what? They really are pulling their weight. They really are doing amazing things. If they keep up at this pace, next year we'll expect them to be up there in Champs League. And who knows? They might pull a Leicester on us. You never know. Tottenham, another one that really has been pulling their weight. They really have been playing really amazingly. And then, of course, comes Arsenal, the Gunners themselves. Even though you're in fifth place, you still have been playing exceptionally well. It's something I'm looking forward to seeing how, if you guys can keep up that same energy up until the end. And if that happens, who knows? You might be able to take the EPL.
Hey, I really like the breakdown. As we've all seen, Manchester City has been on a tear for some years now. They've had a very consistent core group. What do you think these other teams that you said are in the contention have to do to dethrone them?
Man City is in a very interesting spot because every tournament that they're playing in, they're winning.
Yeah.
Champs League, they're doing amazing. EPL, they're doing amazing. It's like they're looking for that treble again. But to dethrone them, it's going to be a really interesting case. I think, as highlighted last season, Man City have an A team, B team, C team, D team, and all of them are superstars enough to be the starters in other teams. And so Man City have depth. I see Arsenal with Arteta. He's trying to groom more depth. He's creating that space. As I mentioned, Liverpool are doing really amazing. Brighton are the underdog. They are, I think, the one team that a lot of teams have underestimated, but this season they're really shining. They've sold all their big names, but they still are able to create something amazing. I saw a reel on Instagram where the coach said, "You can take away our players, but you can't take away our soul." Makes sense. I was like, if you watch the way that Brighton is playing, that soul is something you can never take away. But to dethrone Man City, it's going to be really interesting. I'm curious to see if someone does dethrone Man City, who would it be? Mainly because, as I mentioned, they've got the depth, they've got the coach, they've got the team. They're riding on a very high horse right now. They've got the confidence. They're looking mean. They're looking like the hallway bully that's just ready to smack anybody in sight. So it's going to be interesting to see who's able to dethrone Man City if they are dethroned, as we mentioned. 6-0 right now. And it doesn't look like they're slowing down.
I definitely would agree. I will say, though, I think that City hasn't really been tested just yet. A lot of their games have been, I wouldn't say gimmies, but for the defending champions, you know.
Absolutely.
They haven't really played anybody in contention. Mm-hmm. So I think their first real test is Arsenal, actually.
Yes, that is correct.
Not this weekend, the following weekend.
That is correct.
They play us. So I'll be interested to see on both sides. Arsenal, unfortunately, has had some injuries already relatively early on. But as we've seen, City's been having their own kind of, not necessarily injuries, but, you know, they do have injuries as well.
Right.
But they have been having carding issues, you know, with Rodri being out, you know.
Right.
So they've been playing a little rough around the edges.
And, you know, one thing, City has had the depth, but if you notice, one pivotal player that played a big role could have gone.
Absolutely.
He played an extremely pivotal role in the squad last year. He's not there this year. Mm-hmm. And you can see that when they play.
Yeah.
You can see that, okay, there is something missing. Yeah. I mean, they're still playing amazingly,
right.
But there's something missing. The question is, does Pep have it in him to create a squad that can replace or change what it was that he brought to the squad? So that's going to be interesting. As you highlighted, they have had a lot of carding issues. They have, I mean, but at the end of the day, they're still producing the W's.
To me, that's the scariest thing about the machine we call Man City now, mm-hmm. which is that, you know, regardless of the hiccups that they may have,
they're still pulling the W.
You have a guy like Kevin De Bruyne that can mm-hmm. be potentially out for X amount of time and still... there's no hiccup.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And he's arguably one of the best midfielders mm-hmm. in the game.
Yeah.
So how scary is it that, you know, even with these injuries and all these different things that's going on, that Pep still can make it work with this team?
It's really interesting. You know, for him, he's one coach that I guess I will give his kudos. There's a point and period where I really questioned his ability because he's always had been able to go to a team that has something going on. Mm-hmm. I'm yet to see Pep take something from the dirt and turn it into gold. Mm-hmm. However, what he has done with Man City is something to be applauded. It's something to be noted. And even with these squads, you still have to take account for the fact that he's the one who's grooming these players. And he's taking a lot of these players outside of the system are average players. But when they're within the system, they are gold.
Talk about that.
And we have to take our hats off to Pep for that, is that he's created a system where he's taken something that is outside of a system is average, but within the system works like clockwork. Phil Foden. Perfect example.
Outside of that Man City structure.
He's a very average player.
But in that system?
But within he is gold. You know, so you've got a lot of cases like that where you can tell that outside of the system that Pep has created, mm-hmm. yes, they're still good players.
Right, absolutely.
Let's not mention, talk about them like they're not good players.
No, they still
are. Phil Foden, all of them are exceptional players.
Yeah.
But within Man City, it looks like you have Lionel Messi and Ronaldo on the same squad. You know what I mean?
And that's that next level up.
So, yeah.
Yes, so definitely kudos to Pep for making that happen. So now let's jump into some of these games that we have coming up.
Mm-hmm.
What are some standout games to you that we have in the English Premiership this weekend?
For match day 7, I will be frank. The one that really hops out to my eyes is Tottenham-Liverpool. That for me is the fixture that I'm really, really looking forward to. Tottenham, like I mentioned, it looks like Son is carrying the team, and it looks like he's doing what Harry Kane couldn't do, as exceptional as Harry Kane is.
He's punching up in weight.
Exactly. So, Liverpool, as I mentioned, they're looking like the beast that we typically know Liverpool to be. They're in second place right now. So that fixture there is one that I'm looking forward to. The others, really, Brighton. I expect Brighton to win. Manchester United just recently played Crystal Palace in the Carabao Cup, and they won 3-0, so I expect them to win this game again.
Same result.
I wouldn't say same result, because it's Man United, but I expect them to walk away with a W.
Right.
Newcastle is not having the season they were having last year.
Mm-hmm.
However, Burnley is 19th right now, so I expect Newcastle to walk away with a W. Man City's playing against Wolves. I expect Man City to walk away with a W. Arsenal-Bournemouth, I expect Arsenal to walk away with that W. West Ham, Sheffield United, I expect West Ham to walk away. Everton and Luton, of course, Luton. I do want to applaud Luton, though. This is one team that I believe this is their first time playing in EPL.
Absolutely.
In history.
Yeah.
And they're 18th right now.
Yeah.
I think they pulled off a draw.
And four losses.
Mm-hmm. So that's still, you know, something to applaud. And they might be a team that people must look out for.
Right.
Now, obviously, they're not going to be up there in EPL.
Yeah.
But they still, you
Everton
know,
only has one win.
That's another thing.
So it's like if they win this game, them and Everton,
they're up there.
They're right there.
Exactly.
With each other, you know?
So, yeah. Now, the one team I do want to highlight and spotlight this season, they had a bad season last year, but this year it looks like the prospects aren't even getting better, and the more that they spend money, the worse that they get.
I know.
Chelsea.
Oh, my goodness.
They're playing Fulham. I actually expect Fulham to walk away with 3 points in this one.
Fulham Fulham at the moment has 2 wins, mm-hmm. 2 draws,
yep.
and 2 losses.
Yeah.
Whereas Chelsea has 1 win, 2 losses, 2 draws, and 3 losses.
It's
Fulham is at the moment in 11th place. Chelsea mm-hmm. is in 14th. If Chelsea doesn't get their act together fast,
they
will see themselves in the bottom three contention
and may end up being possible.
This is early for relegation talks. Mm-hmm. It's early in the season, but this is completely unacceptable for a team of Chelsea's caliber.
Right.
If you look at their depth, if you look at their
the amount of money spent.
The amount of money spent, but the player quality on this team, I honestly can't figure out what in the world's going on. Because look, you got a guy like João Félix,
mm-hmm.
who was on loan from Atletico to mm-hmm. Chelsea for a year, looked like he could no longer play the game of football.
Exactly.
Because of the Chelsea game, goes to Barcelona, first 3 games, 3 goals.
Magic.
Multiple assists.
Mm-hmm.
Looking like he's having fun again.
Yeah.
The problem is not these players.
No.
The problem is
Chelsea. Must be the system. Right.
So what does Chelsea have to do in order to fix it? They have the players. So what do you think is the cause of these players not being able to gel?
So it's really interesting. I will want to put, and I hate using this example, but I would want to put Man United in that same conversation where you bring in different managers and different managers have different approaches. And so you need to give a manager a time to breathe.
Right.
Pochettino just got there. He just got to Chelsea the same way that Erik ten Hag just got to United. And it's going to take a while. Now, unfortunately, what's happening is these are two big giant clubs where the fans expect results, where finances and resources are disposed to them. Mm-hmm. And so unfortunately, what I'm starting to realize as the more that football progresses, a case like Leicester, a case like Brighton, what it shows is money doesn't mean victory.
Right.
Money means you can buy the big player. But the big player needs to work within a system that's functional, right? So, for example, at Manchester United right now, you've got the fight with the owners and people are saying the Glazers must go because now it's showing that the system itself is the problem, right? Because Man United, if you look at on paper, the team is amazing.
Absolutely.
The same way that Chelsea on paper, the team is amazing. But clearly there's a system that's going on that goes beyond just having the right 11. But it's a system that now is, do we have the team confidence? Do we have the right coach? Is the approach working? Are we getting the right players? Those are all questions that are going on.
That's a fair assessment. Now, here's my question. Do you think that the issue with Chelsea is that they have too many star-studded players and not enough complementary guys?
Yes, absolutely. Nail on the head. If you look at Chelsea on a paper and you think of all the players,
mm-hmm.
and you had to come up with an EPL dream team,
right.
a lot of these players would be there.
Right.
You know, a lot of these players would be there.
Right.
You've got Sterling.
Right.
You've got a lot. Caicedo.
Yeah.
You've got players that would fit in.
Right.
And so from a paper standpoint, Chelsea should be able to perform way better than it's performing right now.
Right.
However, I also can't take away the fact that players' confidence is probably low. 1, 2, players have to adapt to the managers. I mean, last season they went through, what, four, five
yeah,
managers?
Yeah.
Pochettino just got there.
Mm-hmm.
They need time to adapt to him.
Right.
It's very early in the season. It's a very terrible start,
right.
extremely terrible start for Chelsea.
Right.
But I think if we give them time and give Pochettino time to actually figure out what he really wants to do with the team,
mm-hmm.
I expect that. I mean, they obviously I highly doubt they would make top five,
yeah.
but I think they could punch up there in the top 10.
Yeah, I definitely would agree with you. I think just to finish up on that point, to me, I feel like the players all have to buy into the concept of the team is bigger than me. The problem is you have all these individual stars who, for a lack of better word, is really just trying to prove their value because last season was such a stinker that they're still trying to prove that, hey, I am a valued player, so let me go out there and show you. Sterling mm-hmm. will be trying to do what he can to be not necessarily getting the win, but to showing that I can still be, I'm still that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem mentality when you're putting your own personal accolades or your personal desires to look good above mm-hmm. the team's win or the collective team effort. You know, so I think, you know, they're going to have to reassess. They do have a deep team,
mm-hmm.
but they're going to have to start benching some of these big-name guys and building around a few of them and putting complimentary guys. Like, you can't have three or four superstars in the midfield. In the midfield alone. And wonder why one of them is not passing to the other one or making the other one work.
This is then what goes back to the conversation earlier on of the brilliance of people like Pep. Mm-hmm. The brilliance of managers like Arteta. The brilliance. I might even throw Ten Hag in the mix. Because
it's starting to work.
Merely because... And it's not even about it working, but it takes a lot of confidence in yourself as a manager to get rid of a Cristiano Ronaldo.
Wow. Huge. Right?
You have to have the vision to confidently say, I don't need this superstar.
Yeah.
I want to work with something else.
Wow.
Has it worked out?
Not yet.
Not yet. But I can see the brilliance in the idea of what he wants.
What did Arteta do to Aubameyang?
Right. Exactly.
Huge.
Right. That everybody questioned that. But like, why would you get rid of Aubameyang at the time was slotting goals. Too. Right. And he said, no, go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's moments like these where I start taking my hats off to managers like that, because from a fan standpoint, you don't get it. You're like, wait, why would you get rid of this guy that's bringing W's?
Right.
But from a manager standpoint, the importance
toxic to the locker room.
The importance of the manager having control of the locker room. Pivotal.
Amazing conversation as always, Mike. You know, we can definitely keep going for hours. You definitely will be back on with me as I will be hosting the Sunny Side of Sports for some weeks. Thanks for being with us today, man.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it.
Keeping the ball on the football pitch, the Confederation of African Football has approved a bid by Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania to host the 2027 Africa Cup of Nations tournament, AFCON. Officials and fans alike say they are excited at the prospect of hosting Africa's biggest football tournament. Our reporter Magume Davis Rukuringi has more from Kampala, Uganda. Sporty greetings, Magume.
Sporty Thursday greetings to McBeal and our listeners. The East African joint bid by Kenya, Uganda and Tanzania won the rights to host the 2027 AFCON finals, beating joint bids from Nigeria and Benin and from Egypt, Senegal and Botswana. After the Confederation of African Football announcement of the 2027 host, Uganda Sports Minister Peter Ogwang said he's elated.
The ESC 2027 AFCON should be one of the most historic events ever hosted in that part of the world, that's East Africa. As government, I want to say we are going to entirely show the rest of Africa what Uganda is all about and what Kenya is all about and Tanzania.
It is the first time East Africa will host Africa's biggest football competition. Ethiopia is the only member of the Council of East and Central Africa Football Associations to ever host the tournament back in 1976. A host country or countries must have at least 8 standard stadiums, 8 of which must hold at least 40,000 fans. The host or hosts must have 5-star facilities such as hotels, hospitals, and an international airport. The bid also must be supported by governments of the host nations. Currently, Uganda does not have a FIFA-approved stadium, but the CAF inspection team visited the bidding countries by July to assess the standards. Rogers Mlindwa is a member of Federation of Uganda Football Associations.
We shall work doubly harder to ensure that we meet the commitments. By the time CAF comes here for another inspection, we must have moved the distance. By December 2025, we want to make sure we have realized all the goals as required by CAF. So that in 2027, everybody is ready here to receive the Africa, the whole Africa.
By attaining hosting rights, East Africa automatically has 3 countries that will be competing at the finals. Tanzania football fan and analyst Nasiri Nchimbi says he's delighted that we see Africa's biggest stars playing.
Visitors such as athletes, medias will convey in the country during the tournament and will spend and inject money into the local economies. So I'm really, really excited.
It is expected that hosting the AFCON will promote local tourism and boost the development of football infrastructure in East Africa. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Making our way over to the world of rugby, only one of the 2 African countries remain in the tournament at the Rugby World Cup in France. Namibia's hopes of claiming a first ever win in the competition were dashed yesterday as they went down to Uruguay. South Africa, meanwhile, could qualify for the quarterfinals should they beat Tonga this Sunday. Myron Nacker has more from Durban, South Africa. Sporty greetings, Myron.
Sporty greetings, McBeal. Namibia's long wait for a win at a Rugby World Cup continues. The team, which has appeared at every tournament since 1999, rounded off its campaign with a 36-26 defeat against Uruguay in Lyon yesterday. Namibia was again winless in group play. It was a difficult result to take, given that they controlled the game for vast periods, leading by 20 points to 12 at half-time. Head coach Alistair Coetzee says they need to stop focusing on their woeful World Cup record, which sits at 26 matches without a victory, and start planning for the next World Cup immediately.
Yes, we're also obsessed with the first win. Then we forget about the steps that we should take. Not to hope for a first win, but to know we'll get a first win at the World Cup. I know COVID played a massive role in that, but we've got an opportunity again now to get it right, you know, to do the right things and to make sure that we are better off when we go to the next World Cup.
Coetzee spoke at a news conference. Namibia is classified as a Tier 2 nation in the sport and as such operates on a significantly lower budget than neighbouring South Africa and other big rugby nations. The lack of resources means the team struggles to arrange competitive matches between World Cups, something team captain Jui Uwanivi thinks has hindered their progress.
I think it's what all the Tier 2 nations ask for every World Cup. Same questions being asked, how can you improve? And it's quite easy. It's playing more competitive games against tier one countries, quality opposition, whether it's one or two games a year during that 4 years. I think it will be massive.
At the news conference where he was speaking, Uwanivi also challenged the Namibian Rugby Union to professionalise the domestic structure.
I think the challenge goes out to our union, and obviously with COVID it has been tough, but it's to get that high performance up and running and to have a franchise which is professional, same as the likes of the South American teams. So we can hopefully take some few notes on that South American league and what we can do to reach that level.
South Africa, meanwhile, is bracing for a big battle against Tonga. The Pacific Islanders lost their opening two pool matches against Scotland and Ireland, but showed glimpses of brilliance. South Africa's scrum coach Dan Heeman says the Tongans may be regarded as minnows, but the Springboks will not take the clash lightly.
The Tongan team is a team at the moment which I think very well coached, much fitter than ever before. They've really, really in good shape and good spirits there.
Springbok forward Kwaga Smith, who plays alongside some Tongans in Japan's top league, has seen firsthand their development in recent years. With an eye on qualifying for the next round, Smith says the Springboks must stick to their plans and not worry about the physicality of the Islanders.
And we know they're really good players, and you got to accept it that he might run over you. It is what it is. They're really good players. But I think for us is to pride ourselves in our defence and also in our attack, to use our systems and not to go alone, because I think if you're going to single out and you want to be a hero against them, I think you might not be a hero at the end of the day. So for us is to stick in our structure and play as a team.
South Africa already has lost to Ireland, so will likely finish second in the group with a win over Tonga. That could set up a blockbuster quarterfinal against host France, if the French topple Italy next Friday to win their pool. For now, though, the Boks are firmly focused on their clash this Sunday in Marseille. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Myron Naika in Durban, South Africa.
The United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime estimates that more than 15,000 children are trafficked from West Africa into Europe every year, many of them with the hope of becoming professional footballers. Traffickers are finding new ways to lure potential victims by taking advantage of loopholes in law enforcement and utilizing new technologies. Reporter James Shiminyula has more from Nairobi, Kenya.
The United Nations International Labour Organization estimates that there are more than 40 million current victims of the various forms of human trafficking globally. Football experts say the world's biggest sports events are now major targets for traffickers. What's more, the hope of becoming a sports star with training overseas puts some young athletes at risk. Delphine Shans is the director at the New York office of the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, or UNODC.
There's an increasing concern about human trafficking in sport. We know that transnational organized criminal groups infiltrate the transfer markets of athletes to exploit for illicit profit. UNODC has documented instances of trafficking in football in which contracts with young athletes are highly exploitative and unfavorable to the player, with agents taking a large share of the profits made by the athletes.
Delphine discloses that people in their late teenage years or early 20s fall prey to human traffickers. They run the risk of becoming entrapped in forced labor or the sex trade.
This activity usually involves children and young adults living in precarious situations who can be easily deceived and convinced to pay for services or sign exploitative contracts.
Samuel Eto'o, Federation of Cameroon Football President, explains how children and adults are trafficked without identification documents.
Le passeport du footballeur est donc un identifiant unique à usage mondial. Ce n'est pas la seule mesure.
Eto said that a footballer's passport is a unique identifier for worldwide use. But it's not the only measure. He says that since July 1st, 2020, member associations have been required to set up an electronic registration system for players as well as a national system for regulating national transfers.
Ainsi qu'un système national de régulation des transferts nationaux.
Eto, considered one of the greatest African footballers of all time, says the time has come to find a way to deal with the human trafficking.
Je pense que nous avons les solutions devant nous. Il faut plus de règles respectées par tous.
He says there may be a solution. We need more rules that are respected by everybody.
Je vous prends juste un exemple, Balan. Nous nous portons très souvent.
Eto goes on to say they often focus on men in football, but those who are most exposed are the girls, our women. And he says the authorities that run football should be much more vigorous in respecting the laws and the tests.
Vers les hommes dans le football, dans le respect des lois et des tests.
One change he supports is the 2022 FIFA reform of transfer system. It includes issuing an electronic passport that provides a player's registration history from the age of 12. Eto, who played for European teams such as Real Madrid, Barcelona, Inter Milan and Chelsea, was elected African Footballer of the Year on four occasions. For VOA Africa, I'm James Shimanyula in Nairobi, Kenya.
And that's a wrap for the September 28th edition of the show. Hope you all have a great Thursday. I'm Mukbil Yabro in Washington, in for Sonny Young. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.